Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we welcome to the microphone Bob Tomisch, senior lecturer in the UW-Madison and Extension in horticulture. Boy, we're happy to have him along and certainly glad to have you listening in. And if you have a question about what's going on with your lawn or your garden or your trees or your shrubs, we hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in Madison, you can reach us at 263-1890. Give us a call. Bob, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
It's great to be back, Larry.
Tell you what, we've had rain in some parts of the state, primarily, I believe, the southern, half or third or so?
Probably the southern half. We had our program this morning with the ag agents from around the state, and those in the northern half are still saying it's probably the driest they've seen it in 10 and 20 years. So I would say once you get north of Portage or Stevens Point, that's probably about where the line is for rain. Mm-hmm. So those of us down here, we've had it very dry, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden it rains, and we think, well, everything's going to be happy. But there are a few problems out there that we'll start seeing. For example, we mentioned the cracking of apples, especially the early varieties. The skin is pretty well set on it. All of a sudden we have the rain coming in.
Oh.
It fills up the cells on the inside, causes a crack. And then the next problem are yellow jackets that'll be starting to forage now. Phil was on the program with us, and he said that'll start happening, picnic beetles. And they're in there trying to get the sugars and carbohydrates that they can get. And so people will be out picking the apples and be complaining about getting stung. In that case, what we suggest, if you're picking fruit, you have a problem with yellow jackets, either pick very early in the morning, just at daybreak, because they're not active until a little bit later in the day, or the last half hour in the evening of daylight that we have. Usually by then they've worked their way back to the nest. And so it's a little bit safer out there to harvest that fruit in the backyard.
Oh, man. Well, every line is filled, so might as well go right to the phones here. Joe in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi, thanks. I have an acre of land out in Red Granite, and with the meadow on it, and it's entirely, except for the top quarter inch or whatever out in that meadow, it's all sand. Everything's sand, and I would like to know, get some kind of an idea, what kind of flowers or what we could plant out there. Would anything grow in that?
Sure.
It's just all long grass right now, and I tried making a little garden, but it was so dry I couldn't get out there to water it. And you have anything you could tell me on that?
Well, you said the key thing right there, water. And in that sand, if you ever look at some of the commercial producers, they produce excellent crops out there in that sandy area, from sweet corn to peas, beans, etc. And that's the main thing that you need. The soils will warm up very well. You need to look at some type of watering. I don't know what your situation is if you don't get out there on a regular basis.
Yeah, just on weekends maybe.
Right, but there are some newer technologies coming in where if you have electricity there and a well or a pump or something like that, you can actually set a timer so that that garden or those fruit trees are watered on some type of regular schedule. And for an investment of probably less than $100, you can get all the irrigation equipment and the timers, and these are usually available at some of the hardware stores if you shop around, and even some of the nursery catalogs. So it's the water is the big issue. If you're not getting water under, that plant material is just not going to make it, because sand does not hold water very well, and you need to look at a watering schedule about every 4 or 5 days.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
On the land, except for the meadow, everything is white, almost all white pines, okay? Now, we tried planting a Colorado spruce in there, and it seemed like the pines drip sap almost all summer. And we thought that it killed that spruce because it kept dripping the sap on it. Have you ever heard of that?
What you're talking about is guttation. And what it is it was relatively dry and hot, and the moisture was being sucked up through the tree itself and being released through the stomatal openings. And that was, if you ever are up in the Rusk County area, they talk about the blue hills, and that's actually moisture coming out of the leaves of the trees and that, and it kind of gives a blue hue to the atmosphere around it. That isn't what killed blue spruce. I'm guessing that what it is just lack of water on a regular basis, because it was extremely dry this year. I'm seeing trees and shrubs that have been in for 3 years that this last couple of weeks just simply browned out and died.
That was last year we planted this spruce.
Yeah, it was dry.
We watered it a lot, but it just kept getting this stuff on the needles that it looked like the whatever you call it.
There's another thing that sometimes you might be blaming that. There are certain aphids in that, and not always as common on spruces, but what you're seeing is the excreta from the aphids. And sometimes we assume that it was that. But what they're doing is the aphids are feeding on the new plant tissue, stressing it enough, and that might have helped the death along as well.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Speaking of sap, my neighbor asked me about this. They have a mulberry tree, and it's an older tree, maybe a foot diameter or so, a little bigger than that maybe. But it's it has it looks like a wet sap or a wet belt running down the running down the side of the tree. It's about 6 inches wide.
And was this all summer or just after the
just
rain?
Just after the rain.
Yeah. There's a couple things going on there. Once with the rain, it could have cracked open, and it's actually sap leaking out.
Okay.
And soon you'll see yeast growing in that sap, and so it might turn pink or yellow and then or brown, and people get even more excited. But those are secondary. The other thing that sometimes will cause this weeping effect is that if there is a fungus or bacteria or yeast already in the tree cambial tissue, and there's a wound there like a canker, that'll weep. We see it very common on the elm trees, the ones that are still alive. Yeah. Sometimes in the crotch angle, it's very narrow, you'll see that weeping effect. So it could be one or the other. I would guess if it's since the rain, it's probably just a crack that happened because of the tree swelled up the cells so fast that the elder ones outer cells were not able to expand fast enough, causing injury, and that's probably where it's coming from. It'll go away, hopefully.
All right. Barb in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a small maple tree we planted 2 years ago. The base of it, the trunk is probably 3 inches round. It's already changed colors. It's lost its leaves. I water it religiously, but it looks like it's dead.
Okay, you can break a twig and find out if it's very brittle. You might be right.
I did break a twig, and it's not brittle.
Okay, well that's one good sign. I would keep watering it and keeping your fingers crossed until the soil freezes. This is one of the things we suggest with the watering. And the amount of water to apply to a tree like that is about 10 to 12 gallons per inch of trunk diameter. If you're in a sandier part, you might want to do that about every 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
The Eau Claire mm-hmm. area tends to vacillate depending on what side of town you're on as to what the soil types are. And applying that water and keep doing it all the way until we have freeze up this year. And then you might have some regrowth. I know I've seen some trees defoliate on the top right now. And I think it's just a survival tactic by the tree to get rid of as much water loss capacity as possible. So keep your fingers crossed. I wouldn't put money on that project, but I'd try to go the go the last step there and keep it watered until and see what happens next spring.
It's planted pretty close to a walnut tree. Would that have anything to do with it?
It might. I'd have to look and see. There are certain trees that cannot tolerate the juglan that's excreted from the walnut tree, and and it takes about 3 years on woody plant material for them to succumb to death. And I'm not quite sure. I'd have to look. There's a good bulletin on walnut toxicity, and it lists some types of plants that are very susceptible to it.
Okay.
I don't have that with me right now.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for calling. And I do want to stress one point that you made, and that is watering right up until freeze-up. And I think a lot of us, we talked about this last year on the show as well, that, you know, you sort of get around October and you kind of forget about it, but you really need to keep watering right to the freeze-up.
Right. We can get by with a little less water application as fall approaches now, and that is because it isn't evaporating as rapidly with the heat. But there's a couple things. There is root development, and it's the storage of the sugars in that root system for overwintering, and also mulching that tree with a 2 or 3 inch layer of bark chips or something like that would be very beneficial. Keeps the moisture in the ground, and the other thing that happens is it helps moderate those temperature fluctuations during the winter.
All right, let's take another call. Mike in Richland Center, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. Thank you. I live in the country, and I have some patio tomato plants over near a pond. The other night, something ate the leaves, left the stems, but ate the leaves. Now, only the top leaves, about 18 inches off the ground, they left the bottom leaves alone, and they took little shallow bites out of the green tomatoes about the size of a quarter and maybe a 16th or an eighth of an inch deep. What's doing that?
Well, it could be many things. You got to catch the culprit before we can. But one thing that we've had a lot of reports of this year, and especially the last 2-3 weeks, is with grasshopper feedings. And those are migratory. They come through, and you know, you think it's not like a pest you can just spray and it goes away, because these are very mobile. They will pick the more succulent leaves, and you told me that it was the top leaf tissue. They also leave these indentations on the fruit. I've seen examples of that. I don't know if it always goes out to a quarter, but they'll be feeding on those because, again, those are the most succulent parts, and that's what they're feeding on.
I see very few grasshoppers. Yeah. I have a very large explosion of deer this year.
No, they wouldn't be doing that, I don't think. But the other thing is there's a lot of other insects that everything from the Japanese beetles will come in. Those are little black ones. We've seen also that happen with some earwigs and that. So you have to catch the culprit. I would suggest going out there at night, probably around 10 o'clock, 9:30, with a flashlight and see who's having lunch.
Okay, I'll try that.
Thanks for calling,
Thank
Mike.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Val is next from Hale's Corners. Hi, Val.
Good morning. I have seen the culprit.
Okay.
But I can't catch them all. A few years ago, I think I brought in a Japanese beetle with one of my garden roses or something. And now, 2 years later, I am finding them way too often. They're on the grapevines, and they're on the Nanking cherry, and I'm squishing them.
Yep.
How else can I control them? I'm worried about next year.
Yeah. Well, one thing we find that lawns that are watered, like golf courses and that, tend to proliferate that insect because that's where they lay their eggs, and the larvae survive very well feeding on the grasses, and they'll come out, and they tend to be in a fairly high population for about a half mile around, to give just a brief description.
I'm in the middle of it.
Of a golf course?
Is there a golf course near you?
No, but I have been watering my trees, and, you know, there's grass around the trees, and I've been pretty religious about watering my hickories. So.
Yeah, and about the only thing you could really do is placing the shrubs, and they like grapevines, and certain ones they tend to be attracted to more than others, coming through and having some type of spray schedule with an insecticide like 7 or something like that.
Do I have to spray the beetles themselves? Or?
No, just on the leaf tissue, and that's usually good for about a week unless we have a heavy rain, that'll kill them as they're feeding. When they're beetles, they take a little more. They have to eat a lot in order to get nailed. But I'd go to a garden center and ask what they have available as either a liquid spray or a powder, and you can try that to save certain key plants. And they do like some better than others, as from your description.
Yeah, they've chosen a couple. So if I sprayed those, could I maybe like finish them off on those favorite feeding areas? And
You wouldn't finish them off because they're going to keep coming in waves. They like potentilla, especially the flowers. So there's certain plant materials that they do like to consume. What you have to do is place those on a spray schedule and hopefully protect that, and they'll just kind of move to somebody else's yard.
Yikes. Well, they're pretty.
Yeah, they are pretty. No doubt about that.
I could maybe save them and put them on a hat. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mel. Thanks a lot for calling. Bob Tomich, Senior Lecturer, UW-Madison, UW Extension Horticulturist. Our guest here, I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer on this Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking vegetables, flowers, trees, shrubs, lawns, everything with Bob Tomich, Senior Lecturer, UW-Madison and UW Extension Horticulturist. Glad to have him with us today. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Marie, I believe, is next. Yeah, Marie in Green Bay. Marie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I was wondering, in my vegetable garden, I've got just about everything out there, but I've noticed things have stopped flowering. I was wondering if fertilizing would help this late in the season?
No, this was a problem down here, and you still have it up there because it's so dry. The high heat causes some plants to abort their flowers as they emerge, and that would be tomatoes and beans, and I've seen it on peas. So what I would suggest doing is make sure you have a good watering program. When it cools down here, probably another 10 degrees, some of that stuff will start coming back into flowering, and you'll be okay.
Okay, so should I bother fertilizing again?
I would not fertilize. I would just place things on a watering schedule.
Okay,
fertilizing,
if
you get too much fertilizer, especially nitrogens, will force things into a vegetative phase. For example, your tomatoes would be the greenest and luscious you'll ever see, but there'd be very few fruit on them.
Okay, that's interesting. Thank you. And one more question. I've been using the fish emulsion from, I get it in Algoma.
Yep.
Is that a good one?
It's good, but you might be giving it being too kind and giving too much nitrogen to your plant material.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Diana in Waukesha, hello to you.
Hi. Really enjoy your program. We listen to it often. And our problem, we have pine trees, more than one type, like Austrian pines and also white pines. We also have red pines. The neighbor does next door. And they have tree fungus with quite a few brown needles. We're wondering, can this be cured or can it recover? Quite a few trees are affected, we then noticed, throughout our whole neighborhood. And we're wondering if you do have a professional spray, then if that fungicide could be hazardous to wildlife or other plants or people. We're really not sure what to do.
Well, first of all, I'm not really sure exactly what the problem is. We've had, for example, root collar beetles that have been attacking some of the evergreens, especially the pines, and it's been up in the northeastern part of Wisconsin, but it wouldn't have surprised me if it's down by you. If you rake back the soil a little bit, it looks like a beaver went in there and girdled it off all of the around the roots and the trunk, and that tree's going to die. So that could be a possibility. There are some other insects, and I'm guessing it's probably more of an insect problem than a disease problem, but it's hard to tell. I would suggest you call an arborist and have him come out and take a look at what the problem is, and he can make some suggestions as to what can be done.
Oh, I should have mentioned that we did have an arborist come, and he did identify it as a tree fungus, and I noticed that he put down on the slip, my husband was home at the time and I wasn't, but he put down multiple funguses,
yeah.
Not just one type.
Yep.
So do you recommend, like, they did say that they're very large trees. We've had them for over 35 years. They're not fully brown at all. There's a lot of green left.
Yep.
And we're wondering, it costs right around $900 to have it sprayed, and they always recommend the spring because that's when the fungus return, you know, with the rains and so forth. And we're wondering if there's any hazard in spraying. We really don't know a lot about it.
Well, you'd have to look at the label of the spray, and it'll tell you where the hazard aspect is. And every chemical spray has that information along with it. So
that
would give you that. You're going to have to also decide on the economics. At $900 a year, and if you're looking at 5 years, you're talking $4,500. You might want to look at maybe thinning out some of the trees if they're too congested to let natural air movement through. Sometimes this will provide for a healthier tree and less diseases.
Okay, thank you. That's very good advice.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling, Diana. That's a lot of money.
It's very expensive, and you have to kind of weigh it economically. Is it something you need to look at actually doing or just kind of putting up with it? But the thinning is a very important thing. We've seen a lot of evergreens go in and shelter belts, and usually when they get up to that 25, 30-foot height, they start crowding each other. They keep the moisture in, and then we start seeing needle loss and everything else going on. What people need to probably step back and say, okay, I'm going to remove every other one or whatever to allow air movement through there. It will cut down on some of the disease problems. Not eradicate them, but it will provide for a much healthier tree environment.
Let's go to Marilyn in Montford next. Hi, Marilyn.
Hello. We're starting a new lawn. We're in southwest Wisconsin. We have an acre with lots of oak trees, and we're interested in buffalo grass. And wondered if that would work in our environment.
Well, I haven't had that question for about a year. But when I did research it, my first suggestion is I'd look at some other type of grass because it is a grass that is not very competitive, so the weeds and everything else are going to outcompete it. It likes a very dry, arid environment, and Wisconsin probably gets a little bit too much rain most years. And the other thing is it doesn't like a humid environment, which we often find along the eastern part of Wisconsin along the lake area. So I would encourage you to shop around for some other type of grass to grow in that area.
Do you recommend any other?
Well, I don't know if you're going to be mowing or whatever. If you're not going to mow, you might want to look at some of the tall fescues or rough fescues. There's a publication out on selecting lawn grasses, which you'll find on the Extension website, and I'd take a look at that and make some decisions from there.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks very much for calling. And why do I always forget that website address?
The learningstore.com.
Learningstore.com. Why can't I keep that in my brain? I don't know, Bob.
You don't go there often enough.
I don't go there often enough. I sure hear often enough on this show, though. Learningstore.com. That's the place to go. All right, Jan and Delafield, your turn. Hi, Jan.
Good morning. Some of the coffee shops now are offering their used coffee grounds as mulch, and I'm wondering what you think of that. I'm considering using it on trumpet vines. I have Campsus radicans on my raspberries, ferns, and trees.
Works as a very good mulch. I would compost it with other materials so you don't have just a solid diet of that, because it does contain or does have a pH issue that sometimes can I believe it's a high pH issue. Also, you have some tannins build up. So if you can mix it with some other organic matter, it would
be great.
Good. Yep.
All right. Thank
and
you.
It smells great.
Yeah, it smells
yeah,
great.
Right.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Pam in New Auburn. On to you. Hi, Pam.
Hi there. I'm just calling in about my Russian sage in my flower beds and why it looks so puny and not growing for me this year.
Russian sage is a plant that does a little bit better during cooler temperatures, and we've been stressing it this year from both the lack of water scenario and also the heat that we've had. So I've noticed plants around the state are looking very leggy this year and sometimes short. And
okay.
I'm guessing that as cooler temperatures come, it should tend to fill out a little bit. But it's just a bad year for that plant.
Oh, okay. I see, around other people, they're 3 to 4 feet tall and beautiful, some are, but mine are just real short, maybe only a foot, and turning yellow, sort of. Is that,
well,
do
I
they
think,
need fertilizer? Or?
No, I think they need water.
Okay. That, I water faithfully, but
well, yeah, it's water, because usually if you have a yellowing, now if you're watering too much and you have mulch there, it might be the other, opposite.
Well, that's probably it. That's,
yep.
Okay. So, all right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Tom in Madison, on to you. Hi, Tom.
Well, hi there. I have what I laughingly call a prairie restoration project for my lawn. And at this point, I'm about ready to just kill the whole thing and start over. And wondering if, if this is a bad time to use some Roundup, rake it all off, and lay down some sod, or should I just kill it and wait through the winter, or what's your advice?
Well, there's, another good bulletin on establishing lawns. And apparently, that's what you've decided to do. You might want to keep an island of that prairie grass. Prairie grass or prairie restoration projects are not a one-year thing. It takes about 5 years to get a very good establishment with the flowers and everything else you want. And you probably are battling weeds the first 2 years, and people get very disappointed. If you're going to go with planting a lawn, late August, September are very good times to be doing it. Wait for the soil or wait for the temperatures to drop down to that, highs of 70s and the cooler nights of the 50s. And then have a very good watering program, because those young seedlings do need a fair amount of water. Use some of the mulches, the grass or hay mulches on there. That'll help things along. But fall is probably your best time to reestablish a lawn.
Okay, how about sod rather than seed?
Sod, you can put in any time. Just keep it on a good watering program, and when you purchase the sod from a reputable dealer, they will give you a watering program.
Excellent. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Scott in Cambridge, it's your turn. Hi, Scott.
Yes, good morning, guys. Thank you. I've got a question about a product that I've been spraying on the yard, and it's a product called Protosyn, and I was told that there was some work done at UW, And the guy I bought it from said there's some amino acids in there. Is there any? I mean, my yard looks super after I put it down. You got any idea about anything about the product?
I'm not familiar with that product. Sorry. So I couldn't comment on it.
Oh, sorry, we can't help you on that one, Scott. But maybe somebody else will know and give us a call. Thanks for calling. I wanted to go back to the question about black walnut and jug loan. I was doing a little searching on the internet here while we were talking, and it does look as though maple trees can be affected by jug loan.
Okay, so I'll...
So for that black walnut, if it's...
Yeah, and people wonder what jug loan is. What it is a alkaloid that's given off by black walnut trees. It's not only in the leaf tissue, but it's also where the root zone happened to be of a black walnut, and we found... This alkaloid is even there after you cut the black walnut down, and 20 years later you can still find it. Usually your tomatoes are the most sensitive of the plants, and they'll just kind of wilt and die about midsummer.
Dolores in Kenosha, it's your turn. Hi, Dolores.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I have a question about my bell peppers. I'm trying a different variety this year, and the problem I always had in the past was we have sandy soil, so they got... The watering was uneven, so they're in earth boxes where I get a better control on it. Now, the peppers I'm getting have good flavor, but the walls seem to be thinner. Is it the type, or does that have more to do with your culture?
I would guess it's more of a cultivar characteristic, just like the skin and the size, the shape, and also if you're growing any of the hot peppers, the amount of scovals that you have in there, in other words, the heat source in there. So I'm guessing it's probably a cultivar characteristic.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks for calling, Dolores. Harry in Dodgeville, it's your turn. Hi, Harry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, quick question on acorns. We have two beautiful big oak trees in our front yard. And they have been losing acorns like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if that's just because it's an extra dry year in this neck of the woods, but is there is it a viable way to direct seed those acorns into a, you know, a pasture or a field or even a yard? Or is that, is your retention rate of potential seeds very, very low?
Well, it's a good way to get things started, but I wouldn't pick up those that fell the other night with the rain, because those have fallen because either an insect probably was feeding on the inside and the meat portion or the cotyledons are just somewhat destroyed. So
okay.
It's the weaker seeds that have fallen now. Those that fall fairly late in the fall, depending on the type of oak that you have, of course, are going to be the ones that are the most viable. Take that acorn and plant it where you figure you want a tree or where you want to establish, and plant those in the fall. They need to go through a chilling period, which Mother Nature provides us, and next spring they'll get started. Now, don't expect a tree very rapidly, because the first year all they do is set up maybe at about 4 inches of just a little whirl of leaves.
Okay.
And it'll sit there. What it's doing is establishing that taproot system. And after about 3 years it gets going. I've got one that I've been culturing that way for about 9 years, just out on the edge of the hayfield, and I think it peaked at 3 feet this year.
So this is a long process, in other words.
Oaks are very slow growing. But once they really get going, if you can put them on a good watering and fertilizer program, they'll really take off.
Now, somebody had suggested, and I don't know if this was something maybe I came up with or someone suggested, but like, you know, get someone that has a little disc or something like that on the back of a tractor and disc them in. Is that any...
That's a fast way of doing it.
Okay.
The other thing I would do is use some type of like Roundup or something like that to get rid of the competition. If you want to spot plant them, just take a Roundup and spray probably a 1 square foot area and plant this seed down at about 2 inches in that area. It's going to reduce the competition for water the following year, so your chances of establishment might be a little bit better.
Okay.
All right.
And then last tiny quick question. As far as spraying weeds, does it even pay to do it this time of year, or should you wait till late fall when...
Where are you spraying them?
Pasture, giant ragweed, thistles.
Okay, most of the herbicides work best when the plant is from 6 to 10 inches tall.
Okay.
And because of the growing rate and everything else. Right now, You might knock them out, but even the seeds will probably finish reseeding and being viable. So okay. I would suggest getting out there and cutting them off.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Harry. Frank in Madison, up to you now. Hi, Frank.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
A couple of years ago, we had a locust tree cut down, and we are bothered still with little locust trees coming up apparently from the roots. And what can we do about that?
Well, you're right. They are coming from the roots, and it takes a while for those roots to deplenish. And if you leave one of those little critters growing along the edge of the lawn or something like that, what it's doing is sending nutrients and water back down, or carbohydrates down, and so it replenishes that root zone in that area. Just keep mowing them off. That's probably the easiest venture. Some of the broadleaf herbicides, if you apply the spot treating, I'm talking about some of the brush killers and that.
Well, that's what I was wondering about.
Will kill that area, or will kill the broadleaves, but it will not kill the turf grass.
Okay. Did you say that the broadleaf weed killer won't do the job?
It will do the job.
Oh, it will?
But there are some that are better broadleaf weed killers, such as the if you go to a place that sells herbicides, it'll be called brush killer.
Brush killer?
But follow the label directions on what you're where you're spraying it and what you're trying to control.
Uh-huh. Well, now Roundup, of course, would kill everything.
You bet. You have a brown spot.
Yeah. So try a broadleaf weed killer. Might do the job. Is that what you're saying?
Right. But I'm saying if it's in the lawn, just keep mowing them off. This
okay.
year we're a little, you know, we had a mow once a month where we needed to or not to get rid of the Queen Anne's lace and everything else. And so that stuff was more prevalent. And when it sits, you know, you mow probably every 2-3 weeks. When that leaf tissue is there, it's replenishing that root to kind of get mm-hmm. things going, and so it's perpetuating that problem for another year or two.
Well, if we just keep mowing, will they eventually disappear?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And that's the best way. You're going to mow anyway, just forget about the chemicals in that situation.
Yep, I would suggest mowing.
Sandy and Big Bend, it's your turn. Hi, Sandy.
Oh, hello. How are you?
Good.
I have a problem every year at this time with impatiens. They start out with, I've got them both in huge fiber baskets and planted in the ground. They get little black spots, and the little black spots get bigger and bigger, and then they start turning yellow. So I'm picking them off forever. And I was wondering what causes that fungus, and if there's any organic way. I hate to use any chemicals, and I think they probably kill it anyways, impatiens. I don't know. And I don't want to use it because the hummingbirds are always on them.
Right. Well, a couple of things there. First of all, I'm not exactly sure what pest you're dealing with, so I'd highly recommend that you
I think it's a fungal disease.
It could be, but I'm not sure. I would send a sample in either to the Extension office or to Brian Huddleston's pathology lab. If you go on the website and put UW Pathology Lab, it'll explain how to submit a sample. And with that, he will respond back to you after he evaluates what pest it is, how to control that, and I would recommend going that route. When it comes to organics, there are some products on the market. It's easier with the insecticidal soaps to deal with the insects, but with some of the fungal problems, a few of the issues of some of the horticultural oils that are sold, they're very fine. Also some baking soda mixes, but a lot of these haven't been tried and really researched in the detail that they should have been.
That's too bad. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Don in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Don.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question. I have an ash tree. I believe it's a green ash, and the top half of the tree has no leaves on it, but the bottom is doing fine. And I've looked for the emerald beetle,
yeah.
And I can't find it. I'm wondering what else could be.
Well, it's probably verticillium wilt, a fungal
yeah.
problem. And what has happened is it's plugged the vascular tissue, the area where it pumps water up to the tree, and it's plugged it up in that area, and so that top has died out. It's very, very common in ash trees this year, especially with the drought stress.
I think it started last year, but
it's something that gets worse and worse over 2-3 years. It takes probably 5 years for verticillium wilt to actually kill a tree, and sometimes it can kind of outgrow it for a while, and then it gets nailed again.
Is there anything I can do?
Keep it watered as best you can.
Plant another tree next to it other than an ash and plan on removal.
Okay.
Because what's dead is dead.
All right. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for calling. And be sure to when you check on plants, make sure you plant something that is resistant to verticillium wilt.
Yes, verticillium wilt, though, is so common in the soils all over. It's when you get root injury is where you tend to have verticillium wilt coming in. And it's not only at planting. Keeping the tree healthy is one way of keeping it ahead of the disease. And if you have any digging around there, for example, utilities coming in or sidewalks, foundations, this can all open wounds up on the root system and cause problems for infection.
Let's go to Louise in Hillsboro next. Hi, Louise.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a really beautiful young weeping willow that I planted about 3 years ago right on the edge. The front of our property is Sedge Meadow. And it was growing very vigorously, and it still looks great this year, but we've got these little black teardrop-shaped bugs running up and down the trunk. And I'm just wondering if those are dangerous for the tree or what's going on there.
I don't think I'm guessing they're not. What they're doing is feeding on somebody else that's there, probably aphids. If you look on the undersides of the leaves of the willow, you see, you almost have to look with a magnifying glass. You see some little insects, and I'm guessing that those are running upstairs, having lunch, and coming back down.
So they're not really dangerous then?
I don't believe so. I'd have to probably send us an insect sample over to Phil Pelletieri from the entomology lab, and he could give you the whole history. But I've seen those, and I think they're just living on somebody else.
That sounds good to me, as long as they don't hurt my tree. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Louise. And Bill in Scales Mound, your turn. Hi.
Hi, I've got two quick questions. I hope they're quick. One is something is eating my raspberries. I got purple, royal purples, and I have a great harvest this year. And after I'm all done harvesting, something is just eating the leaves. And I don't think it's a rabbit because I got an electric fence around the place. Any ideas?
Well, I'm guessing a Japanese beetle would be doing it, but they're going to be pretty much gone in the next couple, 3 weeks. They're done for the year.
It seems that they're done already, but I'm worried about next year.
Yep, well, they'll be back next year. There are some insects that will do that. Leafcutter bees will do it. There's some skeletonizing insects. There's a very good bulletin on growing raspberries in Wisconsin, again, at that learning center, or you can stop by your local county extension office and get a copy of that. But it'll describe some of the insects that regularly feed on raspberries, and I would try to go from there. Also, along with that, it'll probably suggest some type of pest control procedure.
I'll have to write because I'm too far away. What's the phone number or address?
If you go, do you have access to a computer?
Yes, sir.
Then just go to learningstore.com. That's the UW extension, and then you'll see something.
I'll ask you to horticulture, and then you go into the fruit. And then the last few berries or tree fruit, you have to kind of go through the schematic. Also, if you go to your county extension office, they can help you out as well.
Yeah. But learningstore.com is a place to go. In a couple minutes, you can get that publication, be looking right at it.
Right.
Good luck. Thank you very much, Bill, for calling. Bob Tomich, senior lecturer, UW-Madison, and extension horticulturist, our guest here on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bob Tomich, our guest, to answer your questions relating to the garden or the lawn, the shrubs, the trees, lots of things here at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Corrine in Racine, you are next. Hi, Corrine.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have two questions. One is about my hydrangeas and especially the endless summer because it's supposed to be blooming, blooming, blooming. And my leaves are real lush, and I have no blooms. I have, for the past 2 years, I've used the Father Dom's Duck Dew. Are you familiar with that?
Yep.
I'm not sure if that's the culprit, that I put too much on there, but it's just they're growing big, but no blooms.
Well, I think you're right.
Yeah, I do too.
Too nice. The other thing was with endless summer, one of the things that we've kind of observed, you know, it was something that was released by the University of Minnesota, and now that people have planted them and we have some stories coming in about it, we find that they tend to they're supposed to bloom all season long, but we see there's a flush in the spring and a flush in the fall is one of the things that's happening. The other thing is we're seeing that in the northern half of the state, their ability to tolerate winter is sometimes a little bit wanting. Mm. But it's a beautiful plant, and it was devised and it's probably way ahead of some of the other hydrangeas that we have in terms of good flower color. But, yeah, you're being too kind.
Okay, so what else can I use to amend my soil? Because, we have the clay here.
What I would do is I would look at something peat moss as an organic matter, or if they have some of the metro areas have a composting zone, you can go in and get some compost there. But you need some compost that's lower in nutrition. Mullorganite would probably be another good source, and that's a packaged material that comes out of Milwaukee.
Okay.
As a organic source. What you're doing with the product that you have is putting on organic material that's high in nitrogen, and it can be
too high in nitrogen.
I had a case. This is back when I started a few years ago, probably about what time you did, Larry. This lady had called, and I went out with the county agent to look at her strawberries. She says, "I just don't have any strawberry berries." I showed up, and they were up to my hip in height.
Uh-huh.
I asked, "Okay, fertilizer is an issue." I said, "Well, how do they get, what are you doing in terms of your management?" She says, "Well, when we clean the chicken house, we just put the chicken manure on the strawberries." Well, it was so lush that any flowers, the bees weren't coming down to pollinate, and it was a whole issue like that. But it was the tallest strawberry plants I had ever seen.
Well, I put them in my raised garden, and my beans, I didn't think they were bush beans anymore, but I did get some beans finally off from them. Maybe I'd have more if I didn't.
You're right, because a lot of things will stay vegetative and not produce stuff, especially if it has a flower structure.
The rest of my garden looks wonderful, though, as far as
good.
The nitrogen didn't harm it. Okay, my other question has to do with, we planted, I believe, in May grass seed so that we could have it in June, and my husband was religiously watering it, and he would come in the house with rust on his shoes. Was that too much water?
This last spring we did have more rust reported, and what it is it's probably a two-week period. It's a rust that grows on some of the grasses, and it's probably going to be there every year.
Okay.
And especially if it's a wet, and he was doing a very good job of watering like he should have to keep it alive. It was just probably one of those things in a moist environment. We have people reporting that same problem in lawns that are probably 20 years old. And certain types of bluegrass are more susceptible to the rust than others.
Well, now that we've had the rain, he's looking out there and he's saying we don't have it anymore.
No, it's a seasonal type of thing.
Oh, so when it's dry or?
Usually in the spring.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Corrine, for calling. Dan in Beaver Dam, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I had a load of firewood that I got, and I put it in my basement store area, and it started to develop the boring patterns for the whatever beetle thing, and I've since gotten done with that wood. Is there something I need to do, like in my storeroom, or is there going to be like little bores or little
was it new? Kind of a dusty material or that came out, or was what did it look like? It dust powder post beetles probably then maybe.
Yeah, it got dusty, and then it had like a pattern in the wood, when the bark, it got under the bark, and I could see those patterns.
But you'll
so
find
on.
That with a lot of different types of woods. There are borers, as we B-O-R-E-R, that work their way through it, and that's probably what killed the tree to begin with. We find them in oak and everything else.
Sure.
You can send a sample, but I'm guessing it's probably one of the other many culprits, and most likely not the other emerald ash borer.
I'm wondering about when I put a new bunch of wood down there, is that kind of is it going to powder up all my new wood too? Or?
Well, if you have the powder post like Larry suggested, they're living there. And you might want to look at going in with some type of pest management approach for controlling that. But they like a certain type of wood. You'd have to check what one fills on, which would probably be.
They use there's a material. I guess if it's
borax,
just it's a borax, a material that's used that you can buy, and it's very safe. But I guess for firewood, I wouldn't worry too much about it. I mean, if you had it in your your furniture or your wall or something like that, then that borax treatment would.
And they like wood that gets damp once in a while.
Yeah.
And so usually your house wood if it stays dry, you're fairly safe. Where they come in is usually in barns and where there's cattle sweating and things like this and moisture dirt, and then in the spring you start seeing a proliferation of that type of insect.
So if I use the borax to scrub the floor and the walls or whatever, that might help to...
It might help.
eliminate them from returning or?
Well, I wouldn't. Yeah, around. But they might just come back in on the new wood. But if you've gotten, you know, if you've kind of cleaned it up, I don't think you're going to have too much trouble.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
Thanks
you.
A lot for calling. At least that's what Bill says. Bruce in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, I'm out in my garden right now playing with my compost pile.
Good.
Anyhow, I have celebrity tomatoes and excellent drainage. I've had to water the devil out of them this year, but I'm having some phenomenon where, you know, sometimes by the stem area, there'll be an area that stays green. It doesn't ripen.
On some
tomatoes?
Yep.
Well, what's happening with these is there's not only that, but right under the skin, pretty much over at least the top half or two-thirds of the tomato, there's a little maybe 16th to an eighth of an inch area that stays green. Now, interior is ripe, but there's this little layer of green all the way around, and I'm wondering if it had to do with the heat or overwatering, underwatering, whatever.
Well, it's probably a heat issue. There's also some viruses that we've known that do get into tomatoes and cause that type of situation. Are the leaves curling on the tomato plant?
No, the plants look wonderful. Okay. I'm standing looking at them.
Okay. Yeah.
The plants look great.
Sometimes this is just an environmental stress. When we get some decent weather coming up, that might outgrow that problem.
That must be. You know, it's either that or the virus, because I've never had this before.
Usually with the virus, you get the leaf curl.
Yeah, no, there's no leaf curl.
No.
Yeah, I also figure that in the 30 years we've been gardening here, we've probably composted somewhere in the vicinity of 12,000 to 14,000 gallons of kitchen waste. So the soil's looking real good here.
That's wonderful. Bruce, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Continue on in the garden. Rebecca in Platteville, your turn. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. I would like to put in a catalpa tree, and the place where I want it is in pasture where there is access to horses. Now, my question is there any part, especially the beans, that are poisonous to horses?
Can't quite answer that offhand. I'd have to do some research, and you can check.
Where would I look?
Probably do a Google search with catalpa and livestock, and that'll come up. I know black locust can be poisonous to animals, both the bark, the leaves, and everything else, especially horses.
Are they related?
No.
Oh, okay. And then I have another question. Last year I planted a whole bunch of, about 35 little bitty red pine. There was a couple white pine in there, kind of like the DNR sends you. And I want to know if I can fertilize them. Someone told me not to fertilize them the first year.
Well, you shouldn't fertilize them probably.
Ever?
Just wait. The first month.
Oh.
But if you're fertilizing trees, save that as a spring activity.
Okay.
Early in the spring, just as things begin to green up, is a good time. And then come in with a second application probably around the 1st of June. And, again, remember that the size of the tree, if you over-fertilize, you can cause some damage. So there's a bulletin on fertilizing landscape trees and shrubs, again, at the Learning Store, and it'll probably give you some recommendations based on the size of the tree and how much fertilizer to apply.
Well, can I ask one more extra question, a little off the point? Somebody else had talked about really long, big, tall thistles and that they knocked out of their pasture or were about to. I just knocked a whole mess of them down, and because there hadn't been any sun on this spot, it's pretty bare. Can I seed that?
Sure, you can dig it up. It depends on what type of thistle you knocked out. If it happens to be the bull thistles and some of the biennials, they're done. But if it happens to be the Canadian thistle, which is a perennial, it'll send up, and usually about a week after you mow it down, they'll start sending up new shoots, and then you'd have to go after that with some type of herbicide like Roundup and several applications to knock out those thistles.
I don't see them coming back up, but they're the big thistle that's got the big kind of purple ball on the end.
Yep, that's probably one of the bull thistles or that member. You can work up that soil and get in there and replant.
Is it way wrong time because it's so warm?
I would wait till it cooled off just a little bit, and it's probably going to happen in a week, and I will be wishing for warm weather. But a good time to be seeding is any time from mid-August up to the end of September.
Okay, and where again do I look for this catalpa bean? Because I really would like to get a tree.
You mean finding the tree?
Finding what? Well, I know I can find it at Young's. I spied it at Young's when I was in Madison the other day. But I want to know whether or not my beans are going to kill my horses.
Yeah. Larry's doing a Google search and looking at it. You might want to, when you talk to Jung's, they probably would have a source that they could check for poisonous plants. I don't believe it's on there, but I can't say for sure.
I haven't found anything yet here as I've been looking.
Yeah, because I mean, I looked up Catalpa, but they don't even think about something eating it, so they just tell me how it grows and how tall it gets and nothing about whether something would munch on it.
You might try Catalpa beans and horses. Just put that in there and in your search engine and see what comes up, Rebecca. That's what I did, and I just haven't been able to get through everything yet. But there's some things there. But Jung's may well have some information for you as well. Thank you very much for calling. Bob Tomisch, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Bob Tomisch, senior lecturer in UW-Madison and Extension horticulturist. Boy, we've got lots of things to talk about with you today. And we've already talked about a few things, but what about lifting and dividing perennial flowers? What's the best way to divide those flowers? How can I tell when my apples and grapes are ripe? That's even a question that comes up. Is fall a good time to seed lawns? I think so. We'll find out some more as we visit with him. And what about transplanting trees and shrubs? We've talked a little bit about that, but we'll give you some more information. And certainly, if you'd like to join in, maybe you have a question for Bob. And if you do, I hope you'll call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890 and email us at talk@wpr.org. We'll be right back after this look at the news. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Bob Tomisch, senior lecturer and UW-Madison and Extension horticulturist. Really glad to have him along here today. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And Bob, Mary emailed us from Superior area. She says she's seen tamarisk for sale at the big box stores. This plant is a serious invasive species in the high mountain regions in the Southwest. Would you comment on that?
Okay, she is right that it is very invasive, but in the Southeast they have a much longer growing season than we do, and so I don't believe it ever matures long enough during our growing season to produce any seeds like it does down in that area. I've had that plant in some plots probably for about 10 years. I can tell you a couple things about it. Once you get in the northern half of the state, you treat it like a herbaceous perennial because it freezes back to the ground each year, but it comes up with some very nice lush foliage. The second thing is deer love it. we had in the plot, we've had a fence plot, and somebody left the gate open, of course. You know, the deer come through the gate, you know, why go around? And that was the first thing they ate. They ate it right to the ground, and this would happen to be probably in May sometime. So, and I've had reports that anybody that has tried growing that, if you have deer in the area, it's almost like the candy of the season.
Well, she also wondered about some beautiful blue hydrangeas that have been sold widely. Hers, she bought some. They haven't bloomed, and she says in an ideal location.
Yeah, sometimes with the hydrangeas, it takes a couple of years for them to naturalize or get adapted to the area. They'll be beautiful bloom when you purchase them, you plant them, and sometimes it takes a while for them to readjust and establish themselves, and then they should bloom after that. So I'd just sit and wait.
Richard in Oshkosh, your turn now. Hi, Richard.
Hi, I have a Norway maple that's probably about 12, 15 years old. It's a nice-looking tree. I noticed this winter it was cracked right down the middle. It has two big Y branches. So I took some chain, pushed the crack back together, and then after that was done, I tarred it up real good, and it seems to be doing real well, but I'm just wondering if I'm kidding myself fooling around with this tree or if it might be able to grow.
Well, you've got a split instead of a crack, and that happened when maples are very prone to having 2 liters, and then they're very weak, and it'll split down the center. You've got a battle you're going to fight with for a long time. It'll never heal itself, and so take the best that you can, but just remember when you're cutting that thing up with a chainsaw, don't hit the chain.
And probably the tar was not a good idea.
Well, the tar, usually there are pruning compounds. The tar itself can be somewhat toxic to open wounds in that it will cause other tissues to die. And so tarring is not the best. If you're going to try fixing anything, look at some pruning compound. And in this day and age, we're suggesting not even to use that. You're farther ahead to let the tree, whether it's a pruning cut or anything else, just heal itself.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, you can get moisture underneath that tar, and then
right.
you've
and
got
then
that environment there for...
You get fungal and bacterial organisms getting started there, and not all of them are bad. There are some that are just there, but every once in a while a bad one will get started, and it's got a nice moist environment to really take off.
Paul in Cascade, we turn to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Larry.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
What can we do for you?
Earlier in the program, I think your guest recommended Milorganite for raspberries.
No, I think for flowers.
For flowers.
They were trying to increase the organic content in their flower beds.
Oh, okay.
And what she was using was a type of poultry manure,
yeah,
very
dominant.
High nitrogen, and I was suggesting something with lower nitrogen like Milorganite. But the compost that you can get at your local composting municipality would be just as good if you can get past all the other junk that might be in it.
I misunderstood. I thought it was going on raspberries. And I would have a strong caution against using Milorganite on any food product that you grow in your yard.
Right. These are for flower beds.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for calling. Scott in Madison, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I've got a question on... Japanese beetles. I had a little infestation in my garden and on my American hazelnuts. I wasn't interested in spraying them with chemicals because, of course, I want to eat the produce and I'm going to harvest the nuts. So my question is, do you have an idea or do you have a suggestion of something I can use to spray on them? And then earlier I heard you mention that in about a week or two they'll be gone. Where are they going? And then when can I treat them? When is the best time to treat them before I think they're a grub in the ground?
Yeah, but you can treat them, but your neighbor doesn't, and so they migrate. As I mentioned earlier, they'll migrate up to a half mile quite easily. Where are they going? They've outlived their life. It's coming to an end. They've became adults from the grubs and got together and laid dozens of eggs and all set for next year. And so usually by the 1st of September, our populations start dropping off very rapidly. Old age gets to them. Control organically is very difficult. People with insecticidal soaps find that a couple of days they just come back in and eat anyway. And so controlling them with the organic approaches is very difficult. So it's a matter of other than picking them off, that's about all you can do. You might want to try the insecticidal soaps. The recommendation there is reapplying the soap about every 3 days.
Okay.
Is there a time when they're in the ground, like say in the fall?
Yeah,
or spring?
In the spring, and there's materials out there that are used for controlling grubs in turf. And right now, it's almost getting too late to apply because any of the larvae will start burrowing deeper and the chemical doesn't get down to them. And
okay.
It's a chemical approach. It's not an organic approach.
Okay, so I'll just have to convince my neighbors to treat as well.
Yeah.
Well, you and the neighborhood and everybody else.
Within a half mile at least.
Yeah, and then there's still some wet spots that they'll, you know.
They'll get in.
They'll be there.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for calling. Steve Tomasco emailed us, by the way, from UW Extension's pesticide applicator training regarding the catalpa tree, the woman who wanted a catalpa tree in her horse pasture. He thought she should contact her veterinarian, which I think is very good advice. The veterinarian, he or she, would likely know if there's a potential problem. And I think that's very good advice for that
right.
caller.
Right. They have a list now. In fact, I was speaking with somebody whose husband's a veterinarian this morning. They have a website that they can go and search for toxic plants.
Excellent. Mary in Wisconsin Rapids, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Yes, hello. Recently, this week, a car lost control, hit a pole, and then headed for my yard. It hit a white birch, a mature white birch. The white birch and a white pine.
Okay.
The white pine lost the bark, which is like about a foot and a half by 3 feet. It just sheared it off. It's weeping sap. And is there anything that I need to be aware of? That I can save that tree, or do I put something on it? Or I just hate to lose this mature.
I know. Nothing,
white pine.
Sorry, there's no Band-Aid to place on it, but one of the things I would do is keep it very well watered until next fall. Next spring, get that bulletin that I suggested on fertilizing your trees and shrubs to kind of bring it around to doing some good, fast, rapid growth, and it'll probably heal over some of that. Depends on how much bark is missing. Now, trees are very residual. We happen to have a white oak tree in the neighborhood that got hit by a truck going 100 miles an hour.
Whoa.
Now, I mean, things were not good. And I thought, now that tree is probably going to die.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 5 years and it's still alive.
Oh, good.
But some of the other softer woods are probably not as resilient. The white pine, it depends. But they'll heal over.
All right, so I don't have to apply anything.
No, you shouldn't.
Don't apply anything. Just keep it well watered this year and next year, because what it's doing is doing its own healing.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Mary. Appreciate it. Anne in Appleton, hi to you.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Thank you so much for being such a wonderful resource for us all. My problem is rabbits and raspberries.
Okay.
About 2 years ago, rabbits got into my small raspberry patch and stripped the bark off of several of the canes. And consequently, in the spring, they only grew about knee-high. Last winter, even though I fenced it, the rabbits got in again and really did a number on the whole patch. Again, consequently, I've got raspberries that are, I don't know, maybe 2 feet high and pretty much non-productive. I've gotten a few raspberries, but nothing in the past. Does this mean that I should throw everything out and start over again, or what?
Well, that might be a good choice. You've got a couple of issues going on there. One, are there a lot of grasses in that amongst the raspberries?
No, I keep it moderate. Composted it, and it's well weeded.
What are you using for compost, sawdust?
Oh, real high class stuff from a dairy farmer.
Okay. The reason I said sometimes if there's a lot of hay or something like that, sometimes it'd be nutrient stress, but it doesn't sound like what you have is nutriently stressed, like sawdust or anything like that. I would simply take an area, knock out the weeds. You can either do it with Roundup where you're going to place your existing row, or some people will place black plastic over for about 6 weeks, kill out the existing weeds, start tilling it up now with the intention of planting your raspberries into that area next year.
Okay.
And then fence.
And fence, definitely, yes. Forgot that step.
Yes, well, yeah. Okay, thank you.
The other problem, you could have one. There could be some other problems there. There could be some insect infestations in the root zone, and there are some crown borers and that type of thing that do infect raspberries.
I haven't seen that. I would see that on the stems, would I not?
There are some that are right down near the soil line. If you dig up a few of them and split the cane open right at the root zone, you'll find a white grub in there.
I'm going to just do that.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Deb in Appleton, hello to you.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have some lilac trees. They're common lilacs. There are two of them on the east side of my house. I planted them about 9 or 10 years ago, and they're between 10 and 12 feet tall. In the past, I've always got an abundance of flowers. This year, the flowers were very, very rare, or few, I should say, and some of the leaves were curled over at the stem.
Oh.
So I was told I had a borer and needed to treat it systemically. And since I've done that, it has not gotten worse. But then I was told by someone else that I should just cut them down and throw them out and plant something else there.
Could be verticillium wilt.
Yeah, it could be that. Also, this year was a bad year for lilacs because we had that warm spell right at Easter. Lilacs are a plant that gets started growing, and what happened were the flower buds were nailed by the cold temperatures we had at that time. So I've had reports across at least the southern two-thirds of the state of people saying their lilacs produce very poorly. As for the other insect problem, it could be a borer. There are a few other problems that can get in there, like the verticillium wilt and some of those things. If that's the case, you might want to start over.
Oh, well, if I want to take a chance on it, should I trim the trees back and fertilize and see what happens next year, or am I just better off?
I would see what's happening, this next year, because it could have been that cold treatment. We're trying to blame too many things here. As for the borer,
I just don't want to let them go.
Yep. As for the borer, you should be able to cut off a stem that looks like it's wilting and curling and split it down the center, and you'll find that hole where the borer was.
Okay.
There are some systemic products that you can use. Again, follow label directions because there's a time of year to apply that where it's going to be effective if that's what's happening, and apply that insecticide so it absorbs the systemic insecticides that gets up into the plant tissue.
Okay. One more question. Is it better to use a liquid systemic or granular?
The granular, just water your tree and it's going to become soluble is the way it is.
Uh-huh.
And I either will work.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your help and I love your show.
Oh, thanks a lot for calling, Deb. Appreciate it. You know, Jean in southwest Wisconsin says the woman whose tree was hit by a car should contact her insurance company because the company may prefer to replace the tree right now rather than wait. So
that was a choice we didn't think of, but that is a good one, yes.
That's a very good idea. Thanks, Eugene. Jackie in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I've lived a good many years, and I don't think I ever heard. I saw an ad for worm poop?
Worm poop.
You can buy in bottles?
Yep.
Who said yep? You?
I did, Bob, yes.
Oh.
And what it is what are they selling it for, a nutrient fertilizer?
I don't know. I just saw it, and it was in recycled soda water bottles. and I think it was from Steins. I don't know. But what kind of... is that something you'd put on a small area of plants, or what would you do with it?
Well, what it is just like any other excrement that can be used as compost. It would probably be suggested for like houseplants because of the volume is going to be so small, or direct targeting specific flowers and that. Usually along with that are the old casings of worms, which would be the... the ones that have died and mm-hmm. sloughed off, and so you have that whole cadre of material.
Is that something that's going to be odorous like some of the other fertilizers?
You got it.
Yep.
Okay, I don't need that on my houseplants. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Jackie.
And it was probably pretty pricey if you start comparing what you get per pound.
Jeff in Pittsville. Hi there.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick question for you about 10 caterpillars. Maybe a month or so ago, I had them on my apple trees, and, I pulled them down and cleaned them off and destroyed the caterpillars. But should I have turned them loose somewhere else, or are they really destructive to the trees?
Well, they can be destructive. Usually it's a cosmetic thing from the start, but year after year, it can be problematic. Getting rid of them is very good because if there's a couple left behind, they just perpetuate the problem for next year. And many of the trees you see, the webbing, and it all depends. There are about three different types of, there's the tent caterpillar, the forest tent caterpillar, and then there's the eastern tent caterpillar, and it depends on which ones you have, and fall tent webworm. So you've got any one of those three, but I would try to, if it's on your apple tree, control it there, get rid of all the larvae if you possibly can. And in fact, if you come and look in the spring, you'll actually be able to see the egg masses on some of the branches. And I had a plum tree last year at one of the research stations that had a web. And this year we pulled off 30 egg casings with it. And this would have been probably right around the first part of May, or maybe a little bit earlier than that.
Well, that means there's some were left behind.
You got it.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks for calling. Sarah in Cross Plains, hi to you.
Hi. I have a question about transplanting young oak saplings.
Okay.
We have a lot of really old oak trees, and we thought about buying some more, and then we realized, well, there's a possibility we could just transplant some, and I don't know about the viability of those or their root systems, if it'd be worth the trouble.
If they're only 1 or 2 years old, I think she said transplanting oak trees,
right?
Right. Any of the nut trees, they have a very definite taproot, and I've tried doing that, so I can tell it from experience. When you have something that's 3 or 4 feet tall, you're going to find a taproot that's about 2 inches down there and going down a long ways. I had a tree spade one time. I tried moving a white oak that was only 10 feet tall. And it was a four-foot spade, and I dug it out, and the thing was at least 4 or 5 inches thick at that depth of 4 feet. So pick a small tree. With oaks, commercially, they usually grow them in an environment where the taproot ceases to grow because of they start them in a nursery and they have air underneath it. And so, therefore, it forms a fibrous root system right away and makes them very transplantable. But if you're going to do it yourself, plant an acorn or pick a small tree.
Thanks for calling. Susan in Appleton, hello to you.
Hello. I have a branch that fell off of my chestnut tree, which is like over 60 years old. And we put it on a hill garden and planted a climbing hydrangea that's climbing across the base of this branch. Lately, I've noticed that there's a dust forming toward the end of the branch, a sort of a reddish brown dust. And I'm wondering if this is harmful stuff or
no? It's probably the powder post beetles or some type of insect. If you look, there are probably some small stick pin size holes in there, and the dust is just the sawdust that they're giving out. It could also be some secondary fungi that are breaking down the wood product. So
it's on the top of the leaves of the hydrangea, and it's in a considerable area.
But it's coming out of the tree, right?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. If it's like sawdust, you blow on it and it disappears.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's one way. Or look at it under a microscope and make sure they're not attached to some little filament hyphae rolling around there. Then you'd have some other problem. But I think it's probably either most likely insects that are burrowing into the cedar piece that you have there. And probably the branch broke off because it was already dead and infested with something like that.
But we moved the branch from the area where it was, and the hydrangea is growing, so that you can't see the branch.
Yep.
And also the tree has these kind of rusty spots, like it looks like the parent plant has a red. It looks like somebody dripped rusty water on some of the leaves. Could that be?
It could be. I'm shooting from the dark here. I would send a sample into the pathology lab because he'll look at it. Brian's very good at that.
Uh-huh.
And Phil is two floors up. And so if it looks like it's an insect problem, like they're moving it, then Phil would take a look at it. So it's probably one or the other.
Okay.
Is it the chestnut?
It's a horse chestnut.
Oh, horse chestnut. Okay.
Yeah. It's more than 60 years old.
Yeah. There is the native chestnut that does have a problem, and when you said the rust, but it's two different things, and I don't think would be what.
Not related.
No.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Bob, thank you. Boy,
it's over.
The time, 90 minutes, went by pretty darn fast here. And you'll come back, though, again.
Well, we'll find our way over.
Well, I really appreciate you being with us today. And thanks to everybody who called in, by the way, as well. Lots of great calls. I'm sorry we didn't get to all our emails and phone calls, but you know what? That's the way it usually works on Garden Talk. To let you know, coming up on Monday, we'll be taking a look at aches and pains and sprains and strains with a couple of guests for you. Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the University of Wisconsin Medical School, and Lori Tyne Brody, who's a UW-Madison physical therapist, and they'll be offering some advice on recovering full mobility after injuries and all those pains and sprains that we sometimes get this time of the year. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.